We're in Proverbs 20 tonight, verse 10. For sure we'll get to verse 10. We may get to verse 11, but I'm doubtful on it. Proverbs 20, verse 10. Divers weights and divers measures, both of them are alike abomination to the Lord. Even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. Let's pray. Lord, tonight as we open your word and look for wisdom from you, I pray that you'd help us, that we would surrender to the wisdom that you provide for us in your word. I pray that we would see it as wisdom, that we would not stubbornly continue to carry ourselves and conduct ourselves foolishly. And Lord, I pray especially in this area of justice, that there would be a wise and judicious use of justice, that we would recognize the great harm that we do when we are unjust to people who we are responsible for. And I pray that you'd help me, that I could express tonight very clearly the meaning of this passage and the ways it should be applied in our lives, and that we would receive the words of God readily. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Divers weights and divers measures, both of them are alike abomination to the Lord. So the proverb here is continuing this theme of justice. I pointed out to you that this is an ongoing theme. It's one of the longer passages in the book of Proverbs that stays on subject. It's unusual for anything after Proverbs 10, any passage to do this. Most of the time you have just one proverb and then another thought, and almost like stray thoughts, like trying to herd cats there. But this proverb, this section at least, seems to have this common theme very evident. In verse 6, we saw the way men unjustly embellish their merits without much concern or regard for integrity. They're not concerned about that so much as they are with just self-promotion, saying how good I am, how great I am. In verse 7, we saw the quality of the just man and the blessing that he is to his family. Verse 7, the just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. So the integrity of this just man is a blessing to his children, to his family. In verse 8, we saw the quality of a just king and the blessing he is to people when they have a just king. And by the way, parents, you can be a just king in your home and family. You are the king of your home, and it is somewhat of a dictatorship as well, a part of mom and dad with the children, especially when the children are young. But it shouldn't be a tyranny. It should be a benevolent dictatorship. That's how it should be in your home. And so this is a quality of a just king, that he scattereth away evil with his eyes. In verse 9, we're reminded of the depravity of man and its impact on justice and integrity. Who can say, I have made my heart clean, I am pure from my sin? And we saw really almost a cry, a heart cry, a hopeless cry here because of men's depravity. Now in this verse, we have a standard of justice reinforced by God's view of injustice. So we have this idea, and really it's a metaphor here, but presented here of injustice and how it's an abomination to God. And this is in order to reinforce a standard of justice, a right standard of justice. This proverb warns us against a double standard. And it does so in a way that is a very close, very near metaphor here. Because the just weight and the just balance or the just measure here that's spoken of are referring to ways that in the ancient world that they measured out a just amount so that there was a fair exchange in the marketplace. You bought a pound of wheat and a pound of grain, that you were getting a pound of grain and that you were charged for a pound of grain, and God wanted that to be the case. So the double standard is the warning here. The double standard is what the proverb is speaking of. One standard that we apply to ourselves or our friends or our allies that slants things in our own favor, and another standard that we apply to our rivals or our adversaries and that slants things against them. And there's always, always this inclination on our part to slant things in our favor and against those who are our opponents or our adversaries or our rivals. The term double standard actually comes from this in the Bible, the divers weights and divers measures here. To this day, in nations without a Christian heritage, you would have to be careful to make sure that a just weight and a just balance is being used. One of the Ray boys, I'm pretty sure it was Neil, who was here for a missions conference several years ago, and told us a story about his dad, who was quite certain that he was getting cheated when he was at the marketplace. And so he went and bought his own scale. And so the merchant threw his stuff up on the scale, and then his dad threw his scale up there and grabbed the stuff and threw it on the scale and measured it for himself. And sure enough, it wasn't the same. And the man immediately corrected everything. And it was amazing how quickly he could do that. But if you know Brother Ray, he's definitely a man with business savvy there. But making sure he was getting a fair shake when he was out there in the marketplace. And in a place like China, you have to fend for yourself. You know, in America, we're spoiled. You go to the gas station, you just assume that when you pump that gas, that every gallon on that thing is a gallon in your tank. You just assume it. You don't even question it. How many of you have ever stood there and thought to yourself, I wonder if they're shaving me on this one? All right. See, the predictable ones. Yeah. Like, that was just like, yeah. I didn't even need to ask. All right. Some of us who are just naturally trusting by nature, we just pull up and we just get our gas and we go on our merry way. How many of you have actually measured it to see? You have fun. How'd it come out? Right on. And they have a little seal on the tank to say that it was checked. And we have a bureaucracy. It's one bureaucracy that I am in favor of. In fact, I think it's scriptural to have it that goes out and checks and makes sure. And if you're off, you're in trouble. And you should be. Because that's cheating. Double standards are cheating. Now, no one wants to be cheated that way. And the Bible is saying not only should you not want to be cheated or willingly be cheated that way, but you must not cheat others that way either. When buying merchandise, we have a way of pointing out the flaws and talking the product down. And when selling, we ignore or conceal the flaws and talk the product up. And we need to be careful about that. So let's dig into this proverb. The Hebrew reads, a stone and a stone, a measure and a measure. The idea is that you have two weights and two measures, one large and one small. Depending on the transaction, one set would be used for buying, the other for selling. The Bible often uses this metaphor for justice. We see it over and over. Proverbs 11, verse 1, a false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Proverbs 16, 11, a just weight and balance are the Lord's. All the weights of the bag are his work. Proverbs 20, 23, divers weights are an abomination unto the Lord, and a false balance is not good. Isn't that interesting that we have the same theme twice in the same chapter and in similar words to each other? So that means that, you know, it'll be long enough away from now that you'll have forgotten what I said tonight. And then we'll get to go over this again. Because God is concerned about justice. And I've said this to you many times, that the weightier matters of justice and mercy, they matter to God. In order to escape our responsibility in that thing, we have a tendency to try to make everything about the externals, about the appearances. But God cares about truth and justice and mercy. It is a big deal to him. Now, this must have been a fairly common practice at different times in Israel, this thing of having two stones and two scales. Because we see it actually quite a bit in the Bible, and certainly during the times when Israel came under judgment, we know that this was a cause of that judgment. Hosea chapter 12 and verse 7, for example. He is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress. Now, God here is tying together the balances he calls balances of deceit. This stone and a stone, and or weight and a weight, and a measure and a measure, where you've got two of them. God calls them balances of deceit and says that it is a form of oppression. Amos 8, verses 4 and 5. Hear this, O ye that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail, saying, when will the new moon be gone that we may sell corn, and the Sabbath that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit. So Amos is rebuking the people. By the way, Amos was a prophet during a time of great prosperity in Israel. And Amos is rebuking the people who were anxious for the holidays to end so they could get back to cheating the people, especially the poor. Micah 6, verses 10 and 11. Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked? And the scant measure that is abominable. Shall I count them pure with the wicked balances and with the bag of deceitful weights? The law directly forbids this kind of double standard. Thou shalt not have in thy bag divers weights, a great and a small. Thou shalt not have in thine house divers measures, a great and a small, but thou shalt have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. For all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. God takes this seriously. This is not a light thing right here. This is a big deal. God repeats it over and over again. Failure to follow this law brought down God's wrath on his people. You can be certain of it. When you go back and look, you can test me on this. Go back and look the Old Testament at the prophets when they cried out judgment, warned of judgment that was coming. This was a major reason. This was a way that the rich oppressed the poor. By cheating them, using divers weights and divers measures. And God did not hold them guiltless or innocent for it. God calls it an abomination. It is the strongest word in the Bible. The strongest word for what God finds vile and disgusting and hateful. That word abomination has in it all that is wicked and evil in the sight of a holy God. What amplifies the injustice here is the fact that it's done under the guise of being just. See, that's what makes it especially terrible. That a person pulls out the scale and pulls out the weights and pretends to measure out a fair amount. To measure out, and they would measure their gold and they would measure their... because, you know, people in that day, they'd take their gold, their shekels, and they'd shave off the edges of it, you know, so that they didn't make the shekel small. So, you know, you're pretending, you're putting on this show like you're giving someone a fair price for a fair product, and you're not. You're cheating them. You are deceiving. And God sees it as like all the sin of mankind, all the depravity of man, all wrapped together in this one thing. You pull out the weight, you pull out the scale, and you pretend like you're giving a square deal, only your weight is too heavy, your scale is too small, and you cheat your customers coming and going. And God cannot stomach this kind of fraud. The holy God demands an equal measure. So then, that means this, that above all else, the people of God must place a high priority on integrity, on being honest and fair in your dealings. All right, so here are some points of application. A movable standard of justice is injustice. If you have a sliding scale of justice, depending on who you're dealing with, that's injustice. That is a violation of what God is saying here. Sliding scales based on your like or dislike of a person, or how important a person is to you, or whether you need something from a person or not. Sliding scales are abomination. Now the temptations to this are many, manyfold, manyfold. Parents, you may very well have the opportunity of teaching a class that includes your own children. And when you do, you know what's difficult about that? Is the temptation to injustice in that moment. You will have to fight against having a sliding scale between your child and other children. It is wrong, let me say this, it is wrong for you to hold your children to a higher standard than you do other children. And I know that that goes against what everybody has said and everybody has taught for years. But understand this. Let's just be candid here for a minute. Okay? The generations that have gone before us and the generations that we heard say, I always hold my kids to a higher standard and make a big deal out of that. How did they do with their kids? Tell me. How did their kids turn out? Huh? Do you think that had any impact on it? The fact that parents were boasting about it. They're saying, yeah, I'm unjust with my kids. Now, first of all, I don't believe them. When they brag that way, I don't believe them. And quite a few of them that said that, I knew their kids and I knew how they were and I watched them turn a blind eye to what their kids were doing and what they were involved in. It was bragging. But I also know that there were some parents who meant that, and they were serious about it. And how'd that go? Now don't tell me, well, my parents said that, and they didn't, I'm here. So there were survivors. As someone said, The fact that there are survivors is not an argument for train wrecks. All right? It's wrong. It's wrong to hold your kids to a higher standard than everyone else, and it's wrong to hold your kids to a lower standard than everyone else. That's a sliding scale. It's injustice. God demands an equal weight, an equal measure. Okay, you might not like what I'm saying, okay? But understand that all the people who went around saying, oh, I always hold my kids to a higher standard, there's no Bible on that. That's not coming from the Bible. I'm preaching the Bible to you tonight, not just what sounds good. And that kind of thing sounds really good. Like somehow we're supposed to be impressed with this. Now, I don't get that. I don't understand what's impressive about it. What, so you're tough on your kids? Be tough on your kids. That's fine. But don't set your kids in the middle of a room. And I have so many problems with this. So many. Can you tell? I'm about to go off, okay? So the one creates bitterness and the other creates conceit. Okay? It does. It creates conceit. And then parents, I always hold my kids to a higher standard. And so then their kids walk around thinking, yeah, I've been held to a higher standard. Yeah, that doesn't do any, like, have any impact on their ego, does it? That doesn't give them a high opinion of themselves at all. Yeah, we were held to a higher standard. When I heard that kind of stuff when I was growing up, you know, the cousins, but we expect more from you. We have a higher standard for you. Well, I'll tell you how I responded to that. Yeah. My lowly cousins. No. Nothing produces a little Pharisee, a little prig, faster than a doting mother. Don't make excuses for your children, and don't trash them either. I have observed the number of parents who act like it's a virtue to constantly criticize their kids. I just want to ask, why, in what world, what are you doing for your kids when you do that? What do you think, how do you think that you're helping them? What good do you believe you're doing to your children when you criticize them like that? If it needs criticizing, do it, okay? But you don't have to do it for show. And that's the thing. That's the thing, is that because we need people to know that we see their faults. Yeah, you see their faults. Of course you see their faults. Is that the point, to see their faults? Or to help them, to correct them, to instruct them, to love them, faults and all? I've also noticed that those same parents who constantly criticize their children often make excuses for their children when they do something that really ought to be dealt with. And so you have this like a double standard. It's like a double standard. This conflict between what you say and your poor mouthing your kids. And some of that poor mouthing is just protection for yourself, because you don't think they're going to do well and you want to prepare everybody for them not to do well, so that you at least called it before they didn't do well. Right? But then when there's something that they really do need help with, you get all huffy and defensive and upset with the person who pointed it out. Well, that person might be suffering from this delusion about you, because they've heard how you talk about your kids, so they just figured that you wanted to know this stuff. And then lo and behold, you don't want to know. You don't want to know at all. Because the point of criticizing is about you, not about them. And the point when somebody comes and tells you what they actually are like, or what they're actually doing, or how they actually misbehaved, well, then that offends you because you look bad in that moment. Now, parents, if you're teaching your child in Sunday school, and I use that as an example, because these are the times, like, we have these moments when all of our principles and all of our ideals are put to the test. And when you're teaching a class with your children and other children, it's put to the test right then in that moment. Some of you are chuckling because you've had the wonderful experience of doing this. So if you're teaching your child in Sunday school and they don't behave up to your standards, but they behave up to the standards of what you allow in the class, then deal with it when you get home. Okay? Understand what I'm saying here. We all have a standard in the class, and then our kids come in, right? And we have a standard for our kids. We want them to behave a certain way, and we see them, you know, they're behaving just like those kids over there. And I don't want that. Well, you don't single them out and embarrass them and come down on them and crush them in the class. But when you get them home, you come down on them. And you tell them that is not acceptable what you did. Now, I'll just tell you, you know, probably to the embarrassment of my kids, but when my kids were younger, like Peter's age and Levi's age and Ivan's age, when I came down off this pulpit, my wife would just have them by the shoulders and she'd just pass them off to me. And I'd just take them over next to her and say, "What'd you do?" And they'd tell me, and we'd spank, and then that would be it. That was how it went. And that was every week. Every week. And most of the time when I got home from Sunday school, Sunday morning, my wife, you know, brought the evil report to me. And we had, church caused many spankings. Especially Sunday school and children's church. Happened all the time, right? When they were young. But I didn't expect the teachers to hold my kids to my standards. And I didn't expect them to say, "You should know better." That's not. Your job is to have a standard that you can enforce, an enforceable standard for your class. And it doesn't matter what family they come from. It doesn't matter what family they come from. That's your standard. Now, if you know that the parents want something better, or you think that the parents probably would want to know that their kids are behaving that way, tell the parents. All right? Now, this is a side note. It's not in my notes. I'm just talking here. All right? But I'm going to say this. I hear teachers say such and such a kid misbehaves is really bad, and I ask them, "Do you tell the parents?" No. You got to tell them. Or don't be griping about them. Right? You got to say something. Now, parents, sometimes they say, "Well, I tried to," but they always get defensive or they always make excuses about it. Look, if you take it that way, if you respond that way, you are damaging your children because of your pride. On the other hand, if your child is the worst behaved child in the class, and let me just say this, that happens too often. If your child is the worst behaved child in the class, you better address that in the class. You better not wait till they get. If they're violating your standard for the class, and by the way, did I mention you should have a standard for the class? A standard of behavior, what you expect, and it should be enforced. But if you are teaching them and the one who's causing all the disruption happens to be your child, you better not turn a blind eye to that. If you would have corrected it in another child, you better correct it in your child. And you better not change the standard for the class. Then, whereas for the last 5 years, you've never allowed children to stand on the chair and jump up and down while you're teaching, we're now okay with it. Oh, we're playing popcorn. Oh, this is a fun new game. This is a good way for you all to learn. Don't do that. That's called a double standard. You don't change the rules because your kids can't keep them. I've watched too many parents who act as if their own child can do no wrong while other kids can do no right. That's a recipe for disaster. Just as frequently, I've watched the way churches with a bus ministry will hand out the medals of honor to the bus kids and the raspberries to the church kids. Now let me just say this, in churches that where bus ministry is a big thing, this is a common occurrence. We feel bad for the bus kids. Their parents aren't here, aren't involved in, at least in bringing them to church, aren't disciplining them the way that our kids are. And so we do this. We've got one standard for the bus kids and another standard for the church kids. And the bus kids, we love and we dote on. And the church kids, we despise. And we scorn. And we look down on them. That's a double standard, folks. It's a double standard in any world, in any discussion of the topic. That's a double standard. You can justify it. You can tell me all the reasons why you think that's the way it ought to be, but that's respective persons. You know, respective persons can be, and certainly the illustration James gives is of a man with a gold ring and a fine apparel who comes in the church, and the church just rolls out the red carpet for him and pulls up a chair special for him and a footstool special for him. And then a poor man comes in and they say, I think we've got some room over in the standing room only department. That's the illustration. But the point is favoritism. Favoritism. If you roll out the red carpet anytime a poor person or a homeless person comes and just kind of marginalize the wealthy people, that's still respect to persons. It's the same problem. It is not helpful to the church kids or the bus kids. If you play favorites, or if you act like one group deserves special treatment and the other group deserves another kind of special treatment. Special as in you get the treatment. Here. Nothing creates a rivalry faster between church kids and bus kids than that. And believe me, the kids know. The kids know it doesn't matter how still I sit, it doesn't matter how enthusiastically I participate, because I'll never be picked out. I will always be overlooked. When the rewards are given out, it's always going to go to the rowdy kid who just happened to sit still long enough to get the teacher's attention. Now, I've been told that some want to abolish the term bus kid. Here I am saying bus kid and church kid. No, I'm not going to submit to your rules. Okay? I don't know. Is that a right term to use? I don't know. I don't know what to call them if I don't call them bus kids, the kids who ride in on the bus. Call them I don't know. I was trying to think of a term that I could use. I think we need to be careful how we throw the term around. But I'm not sure what term would be more acceptable, the indigenous and the non-indigenous students, perhaps. I'm not so concerned about the terms as the treatment. Some teachers wouldn't give the quiet seat to a church kid, an indigenous student, if that church kid was Jesus and acted like it. They'll give it to one of the non-indigenous kids every time, even if they need to turn two blind eyes to the really bad behavior that took place most of the time. Look, if you want to make it an I still like you even though you're being bad award, call it that. Okay? If you want to make an incentive for future good behavior, don't call it a quiet seat. Just give them the prize. Tell them, I like you. I'm giving this to you, okay? Because I want to. But the young people notice how you treat them, especially when you treat them like dirt. They know this. They notice. Several years ago, I pointed out to a staff member just how wrong-headed this kind of thing was, and I was working with a particular staff member on this subject. I'm all for investing in these young people that we bring to church, and I love them. And I don't want you to think that I don't love them by what I'm saying here. I want us to invest in them. But let's just be really clear and really honest here. Unless we win their parents to Christ, they are all long shots for growing up into Christian adulthood. All right? You might not like me saying that, but that's the truth. That's the reality. All right? We're trying to rescue these kids. We're trying to help them. We're trying to teach them about Jesus and give them a chance. And that's why we do it, and we're not going to stop doing it. But they are long shots. And we've been doing this a long time. Brother Hodge and I, Brother Hodge was doing it when I came here. We jumped in with it. Sunday, one of the girls came to me after the service, and she showed me her Bible. She opened it up. She said, look at this, Pastor Malnack. And there in the, you know, where they write who the Bible's for and who it came from, it had her mom's name, and it came from me. I said, you know, your mom was about your age when I gave her that Bible. And her mom, by the way, has kept that Bible. I mean, it was in great shape. I said, that was a long time ago. It was in great shape. Her mom kept it. She couldn't find her Bible. Her mom let her use it. I'm saying we've been doing this for a long time. We're not discouraged. We're not quitting. We're just saying be realistic on this. Be realistic. Because as far as an investment, it's like investing in lottery tickets. Now, God is a God of grace, so it's not quite the same. But the chances are down there. When a child's parents bring them to church, they are and ought to be most likely to grow up into Christian adulthood, especially if they experience the love and nurture of the non-parent adults around them. The adults in the church who love them and nurture them and care about them and don't despise them or talk down to them or treat them like they're second rate because they're not bus kids. The last thing we want in our church is for our own kids to say, I wish I was a bus kid. So they do that for me. That's a double standard. Right there. The lottery is a gamble, not an investment. When you invest, in your own children, you aren't gambling, you're investing. Who is more likely to come back when they're adults and come to you and thank you for the influence, the impact that you had on their life? Who's more likely? Huh? Kids who grew up here. And don't tell me how noble you are because you don't really care if you ever get any gratitude. You just want to sacrifice. That's good. But look around, because we've got a lot of kids. I was watching them today in the gym playing football, which is what they like to do, play in the gym, football in the gym. And I was watching, it's like a whole football team in there. You got all these kids around here. All right, are you invested in their lives? All of you. The most important influence in my kids' lives are you adults, especially you adults that love them and are invested in them. And the point here is that there can't be two standards. There cannot be two standards. I'm not telling you to love the bus kids less. I'm not saying that. I'm saying love the church kids more. And the pastor told me one time, he said he had a person in his church that would literally say this to the church kids, that you're just spoiled. You're just spoiled rotten. All of you. You're just spoiled rotten. You have everything. I'm not going to do anything for you because you're spoiled. Why were they spoiled? Were their parents spoiling, like pampering them? No. You know why this person said that? Because they had a good chance of making it because their parents loved them and brought them to church. If that is grounds for despising the kids in the church, now think about that. If that's grounds for despising the kid, that they have parents who love them and teach them the Word of God and bring them to church. If that's grounds for despising them, then let's take all our kids and drop them off at the orphanage so that they can suffer too. That's ridiculous. It's ungodly. It's not found in Scripture, not anywhere. We have to have the same love. Look, these kids that are here in this auditorium right now, these kids, they're the future of Berean Baptist Church right here. They're going to carry on this work when we're old. They're going to be doing the work here. If they've been taught, if they've been loved, and if they've been nurtured, if they've been encouraged, they're going to be doing that. They are. I, for one, want them to know that I love them and care about them and that they matter a whole lot to me, a whole lot. But not any more or not any less than anyone else. I love seeing the kids out in the hallway Sunday morning talking to me and peeking in my window and all of that stuff. I love having all the kids that God has given us. He's blessed us with a lot of kids. You know, he didn't have to do that. There are churches that are larger than ours that don't have half the kids that we do. This is a blessing. It's a responsibility too. We have to have a just weight and a just balance. There's another point of application here. I told you this was going to be long. Apply the same standard to yourself as you apply to others. It will both raise the bar for yourself and it will lower the bar for other people. This is what most people miss in what Jesus taught when he said, "Judge not, lest you be judged." Here's what most people miss. Jesus said, "Judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, It shall be measured to you again. What Jesus was saying is that whatever standard you hold other people to, you will be held to. However you measure and value other people, you will be measured and valued. So Jesus wasn't speaking against judging. He wasn't forbidding all judging. He was forbidding any judging that is by a double standard. That's what he was saying. People will hold you, and by the way, they'll hold your kids too, to the standard that you use. More importantly, and I think this is Jesus' point, God will hold you to that standard. God will. It's part of our fallen nature that we overvalue our virtues and we minimize our faults. In the Biblical Illustrator, I found this. When I was a lad, the man said, I used to see butter sold that was called long weight. What was that? 18 ounces to the pound. And then the man said this, I've met men more than 18 ounces to the pound. If they're workmen, they can do twice as much as others in the same time. If you talk to them about their wives, there are not such women in the world. Their children are perfect models. Their horses are better than their neighbors. And if they go out to buy goods, they can always get more for their money than anybody else. Often indeed, 25 now a shilling worth for their sovereign. But get a little nearer to them and you'll find the work they do needs doing over again. As to their children, they're unruly and imprudent, whilst the bargains they make are no bargains at all. It's a long wait whenever they talk about themselves. It's 18 ounces to the pound. That's what he's saying. They boast more than they deliver. And then a third point of application here. Be equitable. Equity. We need to learn this thing of equity. Be equitable in all that you do. To be equitable is to be fair-minded. It is charity applied to judgment. Equity teaches us to be merciful in our judgment of people, remembering the frailty and fallenness of human nature. Equity considers good intentions more than bad intentions. It takes into account the whole story instead of obsessing over a couple of unsavory details. Equity teaches us to keep in mind what a person is usually, even as we examine what he has done recently. Equity teaches us to be patient when we've been wronged, to seek peace with people when you have a dispute. Equity doesn't ramp up charges against someone else, but rather seeks to minimize the issue. Love covers a multitude of sins. Equity is careful not to charge someone with a crime who made a mistake or an error in judgment. This is an important part of Christian charity, which the Bible tells us, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. And then finally, here's my last point on this thing of double standard, and then we'll get to this, to the missions report. Okay? Here you go. You ready? You're going to like this point. After the flogging, now we're going to apply the salve. Okay? You'll like this one. Here's my point of application. It is not a Christian virtue to let yourself be cheated. I'm waiting for the thunderous applause, the big amen from all you people that have measured out a gallon of gas to make sure. All right? It is not a virtue to let yourself be cheated. Okay? You're not the bigger person because you're letting yourself be cheated. All right? You don't have to give everyone the stink eye because you're paranoid, okay? But you really should make sure that you're getting a fair deal. It's part of good stewardship. All right, now, we've all probably been around a person or two like this, but I remember one family, and in particular, and like their names, their faces are what I think of. But if you went to eat with them, they looked for some problem with their order so that they could complain in hopes that they would get something free, including perhaps the meal. Okay? Now that's not right. All right? I heard about someone who sent back, who returned a package of Oreos because they found a couple of them that were turned inside out. You know, where the Oreo label that's on the cookie was on the inside instead of the outside. All right? That's not right. Okay? That's not right. That's not what we're talking about here, making sure you get a fair shake. Okay? But where there's actual cheating involved, you're being cheated, you should stand up for yourself. All right? Think of Eddie Ray whipping out his scale and throwing it up on the counter so he could weigh it himself. All right? Don't let people cheat you. But make sure you have a right standard for what counts as cheating. All right. Mr. Martin, come and give us our missions report.